Hello, I'm Dawn Durham, and welcome to Patent Pod. Today we're talking about assistive technology. What is it? Who needs it? And how do I find out information about it? Joining us is a patent consultant, Doug Williams.
Hi, Doug.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad that you're here to kind of help us demystify assistive technology.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things we need to think about is understanding what assistive technology is and then ensuring that we know how to use it to help our students move forward in their success in the school setting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've talked about this before, and one of the things you've told me is that assistive technology is the least checked box on the IEP form.
Yeah, we have no real data to base that, but it's just from past experiences that people don't realize that that what a student in special education might be using is assistive technology. I'll tell you how I found out about that to begin with. It was actually a mistake I made myself, okay? And it was, we were on a listserv for AT to go,
mm-hmm.
And a question was asked, is a white cane assistive technology? Now, I've been teaching mobility for years at that point. I said, no, it's a cane. It's not assistive technology. But then somebody posted the definition of assistive technology, and I realized this whole time I did not know that that was assistive technology. And so that's how I discovered that. And it was my own mistake, and I started realizing all the things that don't need batteries that are mm-hmm. assistive technology.
So I think, and that's where we want to head today, is kind mm-hmm. of demystifying this world and figuring out what it is and what it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's start kind of circling back to you talked about that definition of assistive technology.
Mm-hmm.
Share with us what the actual definition is according to IDEA, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Okay, section 300.5, assistive technology devices. Assistive technology devices mean any item, piece of equipment, or product system, whether acquired commercially off the shelf, or modified or customized, that is used to increase, maintain, or improve the functional capabilities of a child with a disability. The term does not include a medical device that is surgically implanted or a replacement of such device. So go back to the example of the white cane. You know, without the white cane, a student who is blind or visually impaired would not be able to travel around the school.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a effective piece of equipment that he needs or she needs to travel.
So it's equipment, whether it be batteries or not,
mm-hmm.
Or needing batteries or not, or needing to be plugged in or not. It's equipment that helps a child access the environment
mm-hmm.
and access the learning and access participation in the classroom setting.
Yeah, can I give you another example?
Please.
Like if you have
please.
A student that uses a grip
mm-hmm.
for a pencil, okay, and they need that to write properly. If that student's in special education, that's assistive technology. A student using it in regular education who is like a kindergartner is using it, that's not assistive technology. Or even if the student's in special education and utilizing a grip, but it's not improving the handwriting, they're just
mm-hmm.
using it to use it, it's not considered assistive technology. But when it's something that you're utilizing to perform a function or have somebody perform in the academic setting, that's when it becomes assistive technology.
Okay, and so when I know we use the term technology, but as you had said yourself, sometimes it doesn't have to have batteries or get plugged in. And I think there's a misconception out there for practitioners and for families that assistive technology is this big computer-based communications device. And while that is certainly AT, there's kind of this continuum of no tech, low tech, high tech. Could you
mm-hmm.
help us understand those three kind of levels of AT?
Yeah, I went back and I looked up some things. So low tech instruments that might be utilized for writing could be if a student's got low vision, it's a felt tip marker to make things bigger, or it could be
mm-hmm.
an actual grip to help somebody grip a pencil better, or it could be a braille writer, something like that. Some things for communication might be an advocate or a Slayton stylus, which is a portable
mm-hmm.
braille writing that's not battery operated. Something like communication cards, they might be it. Or if you're looking for something that's more mid-tech, it might be something like a simple calculator. Or it might be a switch. It's not really something that's using a wide range of technology.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are some of the devices we might use. And then when we get up into higher technology, we're looking at augmentative alternative communication, AAC devices, mm-hmm. Devices that people use to communicate, or note-taking devices, sometimes even specialized software that's put onto things. But what's happening today is that a lot of things are being developed for tablets, which are assisting in some of those things. So it's not so much buying an expensive software, expensive mm-hmm. device. It might be something like getting an app. And some apps are out there today which are pretty powerful that are low cost or no cost in many cases.
So when we think about this kind of continuum of services or resources that are available in the AT world, it could be something as simplistic as a pencil grip or a marker that makes the print larger or a little bit more bold if we're having some vision problems, mm-hmm. The pencil grip for maybe some occupational therapy, some OT pieces, some letter formation. It could be something as, you had said cards, the communication cards, mm-hmm. so a way in which we can help a child communicate with both the adults in the classroom and their peers. While, you know, certainly we could have a tablet with an app on there, mm-hmm. but we also could have some cards laid out where the child can work through those. That's a piece of assistive technology. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah.
In addition to the computer-based, a little bit more high-tech kind of...
As long as they're using it to get access to the curriculum or communicate or interact within the class or the school environment. That's where the important characteristics of it come. Or even something that's being used more behaviorally or sensorily. If somebody has some special needs to reduce stress, a stress ball.
Okay.
If they have an IEP and they need that stress ball, it's written into the IEP as a specially designed instruction. That's AT.
So a simple fidget toy. You know, we see those a lot by a child who needs it for because of something that's in their 504 plan or in their IEP
right.
to reduce anxiety, reduce stress. That tool becomes assistive technology.
Mm-hmm. And the other points are also for communication, whether it's utilized to access print or to produce print, anything that's specialized. You know, I think back to when I was teaching that I had a student that only had the use of one hand. So we programmed the keyboard to be a one-handed keyboard. Hmm. So the student would have access to more the commonly used letters centrally, and then the letters used less often further away.
So a lot of programming around the specific need of the child, but there's certainly a wide range of available options out there for the average kiddo who's got it in their 504 or in their IEP that may need this assistance. And mm-hmm. it's all about allowing them to access the environment and the learning. That's what I'm hearing you keep saying, that access to the learning, access to the environment.
Yeah, assistive technology really does mean access. I really like to think of it as if a student utilizes something that's in specially designed instruction, and that's typically where you find it. And so if you have something written into an IP and you go to the SDIs and there are devices there, mm-hmm. that's when you should seriously contemplate, oh, by the way, that box on the front, we check that one because he's using AT.
So that kind of brings us right to our next piece. How do I determine if a child I have in my classroom, or if I'm as the parent, how do I determine if this student would benefit from assistive technology? How do we determine those needs?
Well, typically you identify the problem. Okay, so you want to identify whether the students have difficulty with the general ed curriculum, functional activities, accessing print, communications, something like that. So you have to identify the problem first. Mm-hmm. And then what you would want to do is you'd want to find out who does assistive technology in your school district. Every IU has a AT TAC that's available to assist you with the process of walking through how to do this. Now, if somebody has already been through what's called the SET process, okay, which is student, environment, task, and boy, don't you hate it when you
yes.
Task or tool,
okay,
right. And what it does, it takes a holistic look at the child through a variety of environments, and then mm-hmm. the people on the team are really important too, because you have to have regular educators, special educators, parents, very key important, and administrators, because if something's going to be purchased, they're going to have to do that.
Yeah.
And so if somebody in your district has already been through the SET process, they'd be a good person to contact on how to do that. And so you take a look at the different tools, and then you try stuff. And that's to see, does it work? And it might work, it might not work. And that's where you go back to the process and say, okay, well, what can we try? It doesn't necessarily mean it's something that is going to have to be a computer. There's a variety of different things, like communication cards, things such as that. And there's like pod systems, which are our card book-based mm-hmm. communication systems. Those things don't require batteries and are portable. So, whereas if you're going to higher level stuff, they require batteries. And so there's always cases where batteries die. And so yeah. you have somebody high and dry. So it's always good to have a backup as well.
Now, you had talked about, I want to make sure I have this correct. When we're determining who or what student needs assistive technology, we first have to identify the problem. Where's the problem with the access? What are they not mm-hmm. able to gain through your traditional methods or ways? Mm-hmm. We then need to address who's going to be taking care of kind of identifying those needs. And you talked heavily about a team approach, parents being a large part of that, because the parents are with this child day in and day out, on the weekends, on the hours that they're not in the school building with us, so they certainly have a lot of insight to offer. The general education teacher, the special education teacher, any of the specialists that the child sees, computer, phys ed, consumer sciences,
OT,
things like that,
PT,
occupational therapy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very critically important to actually making these decisions for a child. And the other thing is, too, it's not just gaining access in school or achieving things in school. These things should mm-hmm. go over into the home life. I mean, you know, students don't just read at school. Mm-hmm. They read at home. Students just don't write in school. They write at home. Or if they're doing homework, where are they doing it? In home. So that's where a lot of communication really needs to come in. The other thing is, too, by doing that in a set process, you might find out that the parents are doing things that you've not thought of. And that might assist the team in actually making better decisions, mm. especially into the process. So that's why it's key. The key important is really having the parents involved as well.
Okay, that's a good piece to say. And you had also said trial and error. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a matter of trying this out, seeing if it works, if it's successful or if it's not successful, if it kind of jives with the kiddo or doesn't jive with the kiddo. Mm-hmm. That's not something I think we would have thought of. I think we naturally have this tendency to put something in place and then we assume it's going to be perfect and it's the right match every time, when that's not the case.
It's a common misconception. Like when I was called out as an AT expert, mm-hmm. okay, and I was called out by teams to come, they would want me to instantly come up with a solution. And you have to explain to them, I don't know if it's going to work. We only know by trying. And that's how that trial and error, finding out something that will really work with a student, is extremely important. And then also having the flexibility. I'll tell you, that's the biggest thing is don't be afraid of failure. Because it should be called failure. Don't be afraid of learning mm-hmm. what's going to work or not work. That's probably a better way to state it.
That's a good point to make, too. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we win, sometimes we learn, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it goes well beautifully the very first time, and sometimes we've got to put something in place where we're learning from mm-hmm. the errors or the thoughts that we didn't think about or the ideas or the circumstances that perhaps we weren't thinking and being prepared for. But again, you had mentioned the parents, how much of a key player they are in this game, mm-hmm. And understanding, you know, hey, this is something we do at home that seems to be working for us. And I think on the flip side, if I'm a parent sitting at the table and the school says to me, this is working well for your child to be able to get their homework done, I want that, because it's been a battle, you know, at home spending 2 or 3 hours with my daughter getting her to do homework, when the school can come to me and say, this is helping us because she has this grip or this stress manipulator or these communication cards to tell you what she's needing or what she's asking for.
Exactly. I'll tell you, you learn things from the parents. And I think sometimes as educators, we limit our dreaming with the kids. I think one of the things that from Project Max we got is presumed competence. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to do that for all our students. But I was working with a team with a student who's in middle school. And the student's deafblind. And we were talking about just different communication devices, because she was currently using some communication cards and having success mm-hmm. going out shopping with them and doing things like that. Well, the student is low vision, but really likes Google Maps, and found out that you could actually have the Google Maps set so that things like McDonald's will be identified. Mm. Okay, well, it was summertime, and the student is pointing to McDonald's. Parents like, yes, we'll go to dinner there. The student goes in grabs a popsicle, comes back, hands the iPad, points to McDonald's, put the popsicle on it. Okay, because the student wanted a McFlurry. By the way, got to tell you, can't eat too many of them, but they are really good.
A little impartial to the McFlurries. Fair enough.
But, I mean, that's a communication act that when the team thought about it, it got the team looking at, ooh, maybe we need to increase the complexity of the communication card so that we're doing something more enriching. And that's where assistive technology really does come in and help teams make better decisions.
That presumed competence is a huge piece, I think, for our schools and our families as well. Mm-hmm. So we've been talking about the team players, the general education teachers, the special education teachers, the interventionists and services, mm-hmm. as well as the team, the parents as part of that team. What if I'm an instructional leader out at a school listening, or I'm a special education teacher out at a school listening, an OT, or a parent out there listening, and I'm thinking to myself, gosh, I wonder if my kiddo is one that could be, that would benefit from assistive technology, or I've got students in my class that I know would benefit or that have assistive technology, but I'm not really sure how to use it, what should I be doing? Where would we send someone like that to go and either learn more about, so that we don't have this mystery of what assistive technology is? Where would we send someone to get some information about who needs it and who would benefit, and then how do they get help and support in knowing how to use these tools with these students? Because there's got to be a learning curve there for the adult and the child.
Well, of course, you could call Patton, and we could refer you to who your local AT TAC is.
Okay.
Because every IU has one that isn't just for the IU, that's also for all the students within that IU's area. And then the IU TAC could give you further guidance as to where to go from there. And like I said, one of the things is also if your district might have an AT person, because some mm-hmm. districts actually have people that specialize in assistive technology themselves. So I would probably first contact my special ed supervisor to see if that person exists. Mm-hmm. If that person exists, I'd use them. If not, then I would probably still contact my supervisor to find out who the AT TAC was. Mm. Okay, so you definitely want to make sure you're including your supervisor as well. Because once again, we come back to, if something has to be purchased, they have
it's got to be from from someone who has that ability. So we're talking about contacting special education supervisors, mm-hmm. reaching out to your IU AT or assistive technology TACs, mm-hmm. and if you're a parent, it's staying in constant communication with the school-based team, mm-hmm. with the teacher, with the IEP team that's around the table, mm-hmm. So they can kind of help you access and gain information about where we want to be going with this information.
And sometimes if the parent finds out that something or has tried something that's working with the student that might be assistive technology, it's okay to contact the supervisor, contact the teacher, and then try to take it up the chain that way, mm-hmm. to get at least a trial with the equipment. Now, one of the great things that we have in the state of Pennsylvania that I absolutely love is we have the short-term lending library.
Oh, okay? Yes.
And where that's good is that the high ticket items, we don't stock, there's like some things that I had requests for that we can't stock because they're too inexpensive, like stands. People wanted us to start utilizing stands that could be utilized by students that have motoric difficulties, like maybe holding iPads, something mm-hmm. like that. And we can't because they're not expensive. Really the most expensive stand that we had was $82. And so they're thought of consumable or items that, mm-hmm. that the districts themselves should have, or the IU should have themselves. So we do stock more expensive items.
Okay.
So we have a variety of things. And if you just go to our website, and you'll see there's a bar of things in the middle of the homepage, mm-hmm. and one of them is short-term loan, as well as at the very bottom of the chain page is short-term loan. And you can search for different kits of equipment that you can try. We keep our lending library pretty much up to date, so typically parents want to try the latest and greatest, and we try to make sure we have it, so it's available. And the reason why is you actually can get an item from our library, try it for 6 weeks with a student, and then you can gather data. When I was teaching, that's what I used it for. I used it to get my data to prove whether it worked or didn't mm-hmm. work. And if it didn't work, it'd go back and we'd try something else. So it gives you the ability of having a piece of equipment that could be hundreds of dollars to tens of thousands of dollars mm-hmm. To trial. Like with some of the AAC devices, they're rather expensive. And so it gives you a chance to try something with the student to get data to, it does work, it doesn't work.
So our short-term loan program here at the Patent Office is definitely more for those higher tech, much more expensive pieces of equipment that, you know, we are more than happy to loan out to a school to trial and error with a child. Those more mid-tech, kind of low to no techs, either an IU has them or you have them in your classroom. You know, there are tools you have in your classroom that are that would be considered assistive technology that a student certainly could benefit from that you can just put in place for trial and error.
Or if you're over the age of 40, somebody like me who, you know, uses magnification, so I have those types of things. So there's a lot of things that, yeah, you're going to have around your classroom. Something simple as if you have a student that's having difficulty tracking a line, you put a ruler down. You know, if that's required for him to read it, that's considered assistive technology. So you're correct. It's for the expensive stuff here, but so that you don't accidentally go out and purchase something which is then never used by the student. And that's one of the frequent things with those big ticket items is that I've had districts purchase different video magnification for thousands of dollars that the student never used because it wasn't trialed. And they didn't have us come in and use the set process to actually take the student through something that's working or not.
So definitely be checking out the short-term loan piece, particularly on our patent website, but reaching out to your patent, your regional patent office, whether it be in the East, kind of Malvern, here in Harrisburg in central Pennsylvania, and Pittsburgh in the West.
Well, actually, the only, you could check with the offices, but
here's where it comes out of, the Harrisburg
where,
office.
It all comes out of here. We house everything. We have a top-notch crew. Mike Onofree is the guy that does all the shipping, and he's extremely dedicated to making sure stuff gets out to kids. So.
And we have AT consultants in the other two patent offices that would certainly be able to help, as well as the IU IU tax for AT at the intermediate unit. So we have access to folks across the whole state. Therefore, our families and our schools have access to these AT services across the state, although it comes out of our office. We house the physical material. But across the state, you have access to all of this.
Oh, yeah, and we send it everywhere. I mean, this stuff goes... I don't even want to tell you our shipping costs, but because we ship them in these basically bulletproof cases.
Yeah, especially with these high-ticket items. But again, I'd like to remind everyone, if it doesn't require this high-tech, lots of compute, lots of batteries, lots of plugins, you know, it's probably something we have at an IU or in the classroom to access the learning, access the environment, and allow a child to participate in the school environment, in the school setting.
And it's a good idea, even if you have like an iPad that you're using with a student, that you really start looking at, well, what's the alternative if that iPad's dead? Because the reality of it is they aren't going to stop class.
So. No, that's a good point. That's an excellent point. Well, I appreciate you walking us through is kind of taking away the mystery of what assistive technology is and making sure that we understand there's this continuum and to not always be thinking about these high-tech, expensive, big, bulky kind of pieces of equipment, that there's a range that, you know, if we think about a student who has an IEP or who has a 504 plan and needs access, and we can identify that problem and match the access and the tool through trial and error, that's something that we should be thinking about on that IEP form is potentially checking off that AT box a little bit more frequently so our students get the supports that and the scaffolds that they need no matter what's occurring.
And then it's also something that once that box is checked, that the student's able to use it in class. Like a teacher's not going to be thinking they're just using it to be funny. You know, I had a student that had to wear sunglasses because lights would just really affect his eyes. So it was SDI, had to wear sunglasses. And it wasn't that he was trying to look cool. He did actually look cool with sunglasses, but he wasn't
trying to. That's beside the point,
That's beside the point. That he just needed them to wear in school. So when a teacher would say, take those off, he could say,
I need this. This is actually a piece of my assistive technology.
And they could check on it. And so that solves a lot of issues.
Good. And I don't want to lose sight of the connection between school and home, how we talked about, and you had shared beautifully how what's happening at school has an impact on what's happening at home, or what's happening at home has an impact on what's happening at school. So working together in that collaborative team process would certainly be able to help this child and the families and the teachers out so much more.
And I'll tell you that the team approach also, what it does is it builds trust. And that is so important in special education, especially with kids with complex needs, is that there has to be a trust between the school environment and the home environment. Because if there's not, then you can be button heads. And that's not good for the student. It's not good for anybody.
Yeah, put the student first and the trust factor. That's
exactly.
A huge piece. Well, thank you again. We appreciate that. And one of the things I want to ask, and we ask all of our guests this, you know, here at Patton, we try to inspire folks to grow professionally, and we want them to grow in the field of education. If you could offer any advice to those who are listening, how or what piece of advice would you offer for them to grow in a professional educational setting?
Don't ever be afraid to try new and different things. In my 30 plus years of education, it's just amazing how far we've gone. And I think that we've really gone into a much more flexible state, that the kids today know how to use technology in so many different ways. So don't be afraid to try new things, and don't be afraid to try low tech before you go to high tech.
That's a good piece of advice. Don't be afraid to try new things, and don't hesitate to go to low tech, mid tech before you go to the big high tech, hot ticket items.
Exactly.
That's a good advice. Thank you to all of you in the field. You truly inspire educational growth every day in your students. A special thank you to John Ragsdale for producing this podcast. We'll see you next time on Patton Pod.